WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Sarajevo is in the middle of its second winter without heat and with little water. For nearly a year, Fred Cuny has been rebuilding the water and gas systems there. He's directing the creation of an alternate water treatment plant to provide water through the siege, and he's extending the gas lines to provide fuel for up to 60% of the people in the city. Cuny is the founder and president of the Intertect Relief and Reconstruction Corporation, which is based in Dallas. His work has taken him to Somalia, northern Iraq, the Sudan, Nicaragua, Mexico, Biafra, and other places where there is war, famine, or natural disaster. The infrastructure project in Sarajevo is being funded by the Soros Humanitarian Foundation, and Cuny is working in conjunction with the UN High Commission for Refugees. Cuny spoke to us in November.
Without our project, people have to go down from the hills into the center part of the city in order to fetch water and firewood. And when they do that, they come into the area where the snipers are active from the other side. And many people are killed standing in line or trying to fetch the water and the firewood. In the winter, it's terribly cold. Temperatures are sub-zero from the end of October through the end of April. And especially during the periods when there's snow and ice, it's very difficult to walk several kilometers down into that area, stand in the line of fire, gather the water, take it back to the house, then have to go back out again to get firewood, bring it back in, and go back out again to get food and relief supplies. So our whole effort has been to try and turn the system around, to take energy and to take water to the people to reduce the amount of time that they're spent in the line of fire and the amount of time they have to spend collecting goods and commodities in order to survive.
But, you know, it seems like it would be almost impossible to rebuild part of the infrastructure while Sarajevo is still under siege.
Well, the things that we focused on, water and sanitation and gas, are all linear systems that are underground. Pipes are low enough in the ground that they're not subject to being destroyed by the artillery. And the gas mains are the same way. They're buried in the ground. Usually up to half a meter or more below the surface, so they're difficult to destroy. Now, what the Serbs could do is blow up the pumping stations and the pressurization stations and the regulating stations, and they have done that in some areas. So what we did is look at ways of putting the water into the system where we wouldn't require pumps. We would be able to put the water in at the high end of the city, up in the hills, and then let gravity do the distribution and not rely on energy-driven pumps to pump water up to reservoirs. So we have some pumps in our system, but they're far less than the municipal system used before the war. In the case of the gas, we've been working at ways of protecting the regulators so they can't be destroyed, and burying them in some places or putting them in revetments that would be difficult to destroy, and then working to try and keep the pressure on during the winter.
How are you and the other people working on this, protecting against shelling and gunfire while you work?
The places we've chosen are relatively safe. We have some protection from the United Nations Protection Force. They come out to the sites and provide escorts, and if we're fired upon, they've done a marvelous job of protecting us and getting us into the armored cars and out of the area. But there's always a risk, and in recent weeks, the sites that we've been working on have been shelled quite heavily. One site in particular has come under fire a lot. But a lot of the work on the gas system is being done by the people themselves, and the areas that we've concentrated on have been the frontline areas, trying to reduce the risk for people there. And throughout the summer, there was a lull in the fighting, and we were able to get a lot of the gas lines in during that period. But in the last few weeks, people working out voluntarily on the system have come under fire again, and we've unfortunately had several casualties in that area.
So you've had casualties. Has your work been destroyed too in some places?
No, it hasn't. None of the things that we've installed have been damaged. The places, as I say, we've chosen have been fairly secure, and we were confident that it'll be very difficult for the Serbs to blow them up.
Who's working with you now on restoring the infrastructure? Do you have volunteers from Sarajevo, or did you fly people in?
Well, we have our team in Sarajevo consists of the International Rescue Committee, has a staff. They have a staff of three expatriates and 45 local engineers and technicians and staff that have been that we found and identified and hired from inside Sarajevo. In addition to that, we have three technicians from my organization who are working as consultants and managers for IRC that are stationed in Sarajevo full-time, and several other people are working in the logistics system outside to make sure that the equipment and supplies are brought into the city on a timely basis. But the vast majority of the work is being conducted, in the case of the gas system, by volunteers. What we did there is we went to the government and told them that we would provide the pipes if they would ensure that the people did the work on the digging the trenches and doing all the preparatory work. So the government made maps of where the lines should go and then gave the maps to each of the block committees that have been organized in the city. And then the people went out with their own equipment and tools and dug the trenches for the gas mains. We were able to mobilize about 15,000 people to work on the project throughout the city.
Have you had any close calls while rebuilding the water or gas system that you could tell us about?
Have I had any? Every day. You know, certainly our vehicles come under fire quite often. Snipers have taken shots at us. We've been very lucky. All our staff, you know, international and as well as our local staff, have not had serious injuries or wounds as a result of this. But we've had a lot of close calls, and some sooner or later it's probably going to catch up to some of us.
You're not afraid to go out every day and work? Or you just do it in spite of the fact that you're afraid?
Well, you'd be a fool not to be afraid. We certainly watch the news reports and find out where, listen to the radio and find out where the firing is during the day. We know, you know, the areas where sniping occurs, and you certainly know the main areas along the lines of contact where there's a lot of firing, and you avoid those as much as you can. There are routes that go through the city. There's one road we all call the Trail of Tears, where the city has put containers and metal panels and stuff up so that people who are walking from one end of the city to the other have some cover, and our vehicles try and move very rapidly through those areas. But there is no place in the city that's 100% safe, and every day you do run risks. But this is where the people have needs, and you have to go to where the people are in order to provide the assistance. We can't. I don't feel we can back off just because of a risk. These people take the risks every day. We should have to take them as well if we're going to provide humanitarian assistance.
Fred Cuny is rebuilding the gas and water systems in Sarajevo. His company, the Intertect Relief and Reconstruction Corporation, is based in Dallas. We spoke last November. Neither the gas nor the water system in Sarajevo is operational yet. Shipments of essential equipment haven't gotten through. Susan Sontag tells us about directing Waiting for Godot in Sarajevo after this break. This is Fresh Air. In a city under siege, where people wait in line for water, wait for convoys to deliver food, and wait for the war to end, Susan Sontag staged a production of Waiting for Godot, the classic Samuel Beckett play. Sontag is an American critic, essayist, and novelist. She spent 6 weeks in Sarajevo this past summer directing Godot. She found only two existing theaters in the city and no functioning theater companies. She held auditions for 3 days and assembled a cast and crew of Muslims, Serbs, and Croats. Last August on Fresh Air, she told guest host Marty Moscoane why she wanted to do a production of Godot.
I have to admit that it was so obvious to me that I didn't even think about it. It is, although it was written 40 years ago, I guess. It was first performed in Paris in 1952, if I'm not mistaken. It seems as if it was written for Sarajevo. It's about abandoned people, weak, vulnerable people, waiting for something to happen that they go on hoping against hope will happen, and yet it's perfectly clear it's not going to happen, and that's the situation of the people of Sarajevo.
What was it like to work with a cast and crew that I'm sure were hungry a lot of the time, certainly were frightened a lot of the time? Probably many of them didn't even feel well because of the conditions they were living under.
Yeah, what it was that I was pretty easygoing at the start. And maybe I was easygoing all the way through, keeping my fingers crossed that I'd still get a good result at the end. One or two people said to me, who came in and watched rehearsals, it's funny, I've never told this to anybody, said, you're too nice to them. Don't you know a director has to scream at people now and then and be terrifying and tyrannical?
Are you that kind of a director anyway?
Well, first of all, I'm neither that kind of director nor that kind of person, but I knew that I couldn't scream at these people even if I wanted to. They were so gallant and so tired, and they all had terrible stories, and so, yes, I was feeling full of sympathy for them and worrying about their problems. I was bringing them food from the hotel. I'm feeding them every morning. I was taking rolls from the dining room in the hotel because, I mean, however inadequate the food in the hotel was, it was still better than what they were getting. We did have our spam and rice and rolls and whatever.
I was going to ask you, what kind of food were you able to eat there?
Well, it wasn't very much, but it was more than what they had. I noticed how tired they were because they would sit down or lie down every time I stopped the rehearsal for 1 minute to give a correction or suggestion. They'd immediately all drop into chairs or drop to the floor. And actors don't do that. I mean, they stay in place when you talk to them, unless it goes on and on and on. And I wasn't stopping them for more than a minute or two.
So they had no stamina, really?
They had no stamina at all. And the character of Lucky in Beckett's play is a figure of a man who carries a lot of suitcases. He's the figure of a burdened person. And needless to say, the suitcases that the actor playing Lucky in my production was carrying were all empty. And he was having a very hard time carrying empty, very light suitcases, two or three.
They were
made of cardboard, and they were still an effort for him to carry.
Tell us how the play was received.
With enormous enthusiasm. I think it was a big event there. It was a big event that a foreigner came and wanted to stay there and work and do something.
Susan Sontag spoke with Marty Moscowane last August. A month after their interview, Sontag returned briefly to Sarajevo. She plans to go back again next week. This is Fresh Air.